This week, holy crap, did you see the size of that explosion? Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. Now.
Welcome to episode 86. Today is August 14th, 2015. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
Our break music is provided by the Polish ambassador, as usual. And welcome to our fourth anniversary.
Holy moly.
That's right. The MPP turns four this month. How is that possible? How have I been staring at you guys for 4 years?
Inertia. Nothing but inertia.
We'll take it.
So, yeah, we are celebrating with a few adult beverages this evening. And we have a potpourri of topics once again because, damn, a lot has happened in the last month. I don't know what to start with.
Start with explaining your intro.
Oh, yeah, so there were two huge explosions in a city, Tianjin, China, Wednesday night, that has killed 50 people so far. The death toll's up to 50, hundreds more injured. And, yeah, check out YouTube for some fairly disturbing video of the explosions. I mean, they're like mushroom cloud, atomic bomb scale explosions.
Visible from space. I saw a satellite view.
Yeah, it's pretty tragic. And it appears that the first fire crews that were on the scene made it worse because they weren't aware that one of the warehouses was full of calcium carbide, which, when exposed to water, bursts into flames. So, oops.
Not funny.
Well, you know, you got to find some silver lining in a story that terrible.
Interesting that the only piece of it I've seen is that China is not allowing news crews to report from outside the area.
Yeah. So. Yeah, China's notorious for
for
not wanting negative publicity of any kind.
Currency going down, though. Seen that?
Yeah.
Is that good for us? I figure if theirs going down, it's good for us. But I don't understand how much of anything works. But
it's not.
Okay. Before you go on.
Exporters are losing it.
Right, because it makes our products more expensive when they do that.
But before you give me your little fancy truth argument.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to confuse you with
don't confuse me. When you hear it going the other way, do you think it's bad? When you hear,
it depends. It's a
okay.
Everything in moderation, including moderation.
Right, right. I guess I don't know. That was my only reaction to hearing the news about the currency was that if it was flipped the other way, I would have felt bad for a little bit. So I was like, hey, why not feel good for a little bit? Hey, stick it to them. Hello to all our Chinese listeners on the podcast.
I would say hello in Chinese if I knew how.
That's your big chance.
So what else? Jeremy, you got a little list of topics. I'm sure you want to talk about your boy.
My boy?
Al Gore? No.
Oh, Donald Trump.
Yeah, the Donald.
The Donald. Outstanding performance in the debate, strengthening his position each day.
Well, anybody that tells Megyn Kelly to shut up is all right in my book, but
yeah, I still think obviously he needs to refine his message and choose his battles a little bit more wisely, you know, not fly off the cuff with
right
remarks that could be interpreted as
what?
Very dirty.
Yeah, racist, misogynistic. Yeah, right.
However,
it runs the gamut.
he keeps getting support from the most unlikely places. And
neo-Nazis.
Militia. Have you seen members? The video of the two black ladies who support him and are telling him?
No, I didn't see that.
He's the one who's... he probably paid them. But I...
Bought him an apartment on the Upper West Side.
What's the difference? You can buy him... I'm not going to get into this because it's going to come off as not the way I intend or we intend. You know, when I run for office someday, then Megyn Kelly will be
right
talking about my remarks.
Right. Be playing clips from the podcast. Yeah, that would be devastating
to
your political career.
No, I still think... So you watch the debate and you have... all of these people up there saying the same thing. They all have to throw out the, well, my faith guides me on this. You know, they check the box on that one. You've now, without just saying I believe in God, you've hinted that you believe in it. So, okay, I got that piece
right.
of the base covered. Now,
That's
let's
right.
see, what's the next one?
Covered the religious right.
Yep, got those people. Make some comment about protecting my own life and my family's safety. Okay, got the gun people. There
yeah.
we go. All right. Donald Trump, while he did some of the same things, he's still speaking to people who are tired of all of that mess and all of the playbooks that
yeah.
say, this is what you have to say, and if you say it the wrong way and somebody calls you out, then you go apologize like this. He's not apologizing, and his lack of apology... and then attacking makes him look better every time somehow.
Doesn't that just show a dysfunction in the whole Republican Party?
It shows a dysfunction in the country and in politics. But
there's some of that, but look.
I agree that his approach is refreshing just
yes.
because it's unique and, you know, novel and whatnot. But, I mean, can you really picture him as president? In the Oval Office.
Yes.
Dictating foreign policy.
In kind of
yes.
like...
dealing with heads of state of other
yes.
countries.
Well,
I mean, all the people that want to complain about how much damage Obama has done to this country's reputation, is Donald Trump going to repair any of that, or is he just going to drive us further into the ground?
Who's negotiated more deals with... say a
oh,
diverse
God.
Crowd.
I don't even want to get into that.
Let's not get into
the
credentials. Truth again.
Hey, because he makes money and creates jobs. Okay, well, yeah. So,
well, no. Answer that question. Has he ever negotiated
a
deal?
We can talk all of that. I don't want to talk about.
You don't want
Donald
to talk
Trump.
About something that's important. There, good.
That's right.
Okay,
I don't.
Let's talk about. Hey, the Cardinals are up 1-0 on Miami now.
Hey, you're saying that's not important?
No, it's not important because we should be up 5-0 on Miami.
I mean, I thought for someone who says that they just can't envision it, one of our movies of movie night was The Corporation, which was all about the linkages between big business and government.
Right.
So
right.
Corporations are a sociopath, right?
That's right.
Okay. What else have we said, or who else have we said is a sociopath? Politicians.
Donald Trump.
No, right. politicians.
Exactly. Okay, yeah.
Okay, so they're the same. So what's the difference? Let's get a sociopath in there who can actually do something good for us.
Exactly. So that's why I was like, oh, could I see it? I couldn't see it, like, on the Mount Rushmore with the toupee all looking weird. But then I was like, maybe.
Couldn't see it if it was visible from space, like everything else. Right. Like that explosion in the Great Wall of China.
The Great Wall of China is visible from
yeah.
space. But I could see it as like, maybe we're that close to the perfect convergence of a, you know, basically a raw capitalist being the why not just complete the loop maybe
if Donald Trump is elected, then idiocracy will have come
right
true.
That's kind of what I think about it too.
That I mean, that's the way I'm looking at it, right? I mean, he Jeremy's just looking at me like,
that's what I think too.
What
do you,
are you talking about?
I mean, what I think is like I mean, I think if I was a Republican voter, I would just be essentially freaking out right now. The last two elections, if you're as I understand it, like a standard Republican view, they basically lost it in the primary. If you're a pat yourself on the back Republican, and you don't talk about, you know, how your message is wrong and how you don't really have any answers for anything, that's my take. But if you're a good Republican, you think, hey, we just picked the wrong guy in the primary. The wrong guy won. It should not have been John McCain and Sarah Palin, and a true conservative, as they say, would have beaten Barack Obama. And it shouldn't have been Mitt Romney. in the next time. That essentially, as I understand it, the understanding of a standard Republican voter is that they basically lost both those elections in the primary by picking the wrong guy.
Okay, I'll buy that argument.
Right. So now we're coming up on the next one, and Trump's leading in Iowa, and there must be, I don't know, is it freak out time? I mean, you're a fan, but...
Yeah. The establishment is freaking out.
Reince Priebus is not getting much sleep.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
I mean, why...
Especially when Trump starts threatening to run as an independent.
Yeah, so that's another aspect. Are you a conspiracy theorist? You buy into the left and the Clinton campaign is feeding this so that he will eventually run and hand her the election, which once Al Gore decides to run and Joe Biden decides to run on the Democratic ticket, whoa, all bets are off. Hillary's going to actually make it, which why in the world can you not get somebody new?
And personally, I don't really see why Hillary's... Well, we'll come back to your question. I don't really see why Hillary's the de facto... I mean, she's leading in the polls, whatever.
She was the de facto nominee when Barack started
running. Right, and then little Barack came by and put the smack down. So I don't really buy that she's definitely in there.
I think we're going to see her in handcuffs way before...
Well, she should be.
It,
and that
gets put to a vote.
It's pathetic that it's taken this long for this to gain any traction.
Right. So who's
going to be the scapegoat on that one? Is it this Huma lady? I can't imagine her being the scapegoat because they were too tight. But somebody, it's not going to be Hillary. Somehow this will get blamed on a staffer, all these emails. And
whatever, yeah.
We all know.
They'll blame the IT guy.
Hey, it usually works. So back to your question about your conspiracy. So it's like I want to believe the conspiracy, but what I really think it is, and this is my sad take on the world, is I think his only motivation is self-promotion. That's what... I don't think he sees any difference between self-promoting himself by putting his name on a big hotel, running a TV show, running a presidential campaign.
Right.
So he might not even care about winning, because you don't even have to make the best hotel. He's trying to make the most money.
I disagree.
What?
Trump's a lot of things, but he's not stupid. And if he were doing this to promote himself, he would not be saying the things that he's been saying.
No.
Because he's been losing business. These have been poor business decisions on his part. And not that he's immune from making poor business decisions as many times as he's filed bankruptcy in his life.
He's about four times using the laws of the country.
Yeah. I heard the party line. But I can't believe that he would be doing all of this to sabotage himself as a businessman.
But is this the Trump the person, though, is going through the roof, right? We're talking about Donald Trump, for goodness sake. He's had a show on The Apprentice for years, and we don't talk about him. So Trump, the person, his stock's way up, right?
Trump, the candidate, is way up.
How does
he parlay that into anything after he loses?
That's the new thing, and I can't really puzzle around. But I just remember when I started following politics through, the Gore era, that there was a real, and I mentioned this last time, there was a real kind of nervous session before you actually went into the race for your primary, whether you were actually going to run or not. Ooh, is this guy going to run? Is he not? Well, now I think it's a changing of the reporting and the social media and our entertainment structure that there's really no downside to running and failing.
Right.
Right? If you run and fail, and your name's out there, and you're John Kasich or whatever you are.
Right.
Well, this is a downside for Howard Dean, although I did see him on TV the other day.
Exactly.
I didn't even know he was still involved in anything.
Exactly. So would he have been in that spot if he didn't run for president in that year? Probably not. So, because he was Vermont governor and a doctor, right? I mean, he's probably not going to show up on MSNBC. But he is because he ran for president. So it's like now we've changed where it's almost like there's almost no downside to doing it.
Well, the default now is everyone's going to run, right?
Right.
There's no discussion about it. Will he, won't he? It's just assume
so
everybody's going to run.
They're going to have a debate on who doesn't run now.
So I think you have your name out there, and then you parlay it into something. Maybe, I don't know, I couldn't see Trump, taking a lesser political office. Can you imagine Donald Trump vice president? That'd be the weirdest thing ever.
No, he...
So I don't really know what it is, but I'm sure he's got some plan. I think he's building capital of the Trump name.
I can see, I partly agree with both of you.
Okay.
More with me.
Well, I can see that he's willing to sacrifice some of his business to be president of the United States. That's the ultimate, kind of the ultimate thing, really.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so you could already buy a boat.
CEO of the largest corporation on Earth.
Right.
Preach it.
All right. So, I can see Rob's argument, but I can see some of what Jerry's saying, too. This is not, he's admitted, this has not been good for the Trump brand. But he believes, at least he's saying,
yeah,
I believe I can do something better than what we have.
And despite all of his faults, I do believe he sincerely thinks that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he, you know, did you see the video of him on Oprah back in 1988? Yeah. So
I saw a post, but I didn't watch it. I'm sure one of our listeners didn't watch
Oprah
it either,
comes right out and asks him if he'd ever run for president, and he says, "Well, probably not, but I know I would do a good job if I did." You know. So I mean, he's been thinking about it for 30 something years, and so it's obviously something he's committed to.
Yeah, and I beyond, you can say he's this or he's that. He doesn't like to lose.
Right.
And I think maybe we could use somebody like that. Yes, you have to be diplomatic and you have to compromise, but
as someone on the left side, like I really wish I really wish it was Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. I wish those two would go at it in some kind of honest way.
No,
they were particularly not honest during the debate. You know, they were very vanilla as far as the
I don't like either of those. As much as I liked Ron Paul, Rand Paul is a zero.
Why?
Me. He just
policy wise, or is it the floppy hair, or what?
He is. I don't believe him. I don't believe him.
You don't think he believes what he's saying?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think he's a little bit crazy.
I have that same sense. Well, I don't think he's crazy, but I have that same sense. Like anytime he says anything that agreed with his father's stance on something, he's saying it just to appeal to his father's supporters.
Yeah.
He doesn't really.
I'll look into it because I always thought I considered him authentic.
I don't find him very bright. Like, he tried to pick at Trump on something, and he was. He didn't listen to what Trump had just said, and even I picked up on it, and I'm not...
He wasn't prepared for his
Biden. And Trump smoked him.
Right.
So some of that is, you know, the prep they go through for the debate. If they hear certain keywords, they just blurt out, you know, the response that they practiced, and whether it's...
You know, the great example of that, though, total distraction, was when Jeb Bush said remember his little gaffe? He's like, well, in Florida, they call me Jeb. You know, he was trying to get out the Vito Corleone line because he vetoed the bill.
Yeah.
Like, he could tell he practiced it for, 80 times, and that was my big chance. You know, he screwed it up and said, well, in Florida, they call me Jeb. What else would they call you?
I thought he was trying to be folksy when he first said that, and then he went into
back to and then you're like, oh, I get it. So you think Trump's just... As far as authentic, you think when he's verbally sparring, he's just doing his thing. It's not practice.
Here's another quote from him this week. Somebody was calling him a whiner. He said, "Yes, I whine until I win." He didn't come out saying, "No, I'm not." Like when you're in kindergarten, you know. Right.
I know you are, but what am I?
You're not the boss of me. He's like, "Yeah, I whine, and guess what? I beat you too." So. Boom. I'll whine all the way to first place and winning this election.
I think you're hooking your ship to the wrong sail. Wrong boat. I don't know. There's no reason why he wouldn't run as an independent candidate if he didn't win the primary. I think he's gonna take a whole wing of the conservative voters. It looks like the whole thing is just gifting the presidency to the Democratic Party. This whole process.
How are they not going to win anyway?
Why? Why?
Flooding. Our country is being flooded with Democrats. Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, why do you say blah, blah, blah?
I've gone through this a number of times. I have, I think I'm owed like two or three full pizzas from my conservative family who sometimes in their sad moments say, we'll never win another election, we'll never get the Congress back, we'll never win the presidency, blah, blah, blah. Just feel bad for yourself. You got their ideas, right? You got the Trumps. Trump's going to do it. They'll be hell to pay.
Why do you not like Trump?
Like I said, my main reason, I guess I can't really hear his ideas. His whole being from the time he was a being till now is about self-promotion. And I give him a big high five for that. Good. Great. Promote yourself. Make as much money as you can. That's also good. Like, I have no qualms with that. But I think he's using the political process to further that sort of corporate capitalist self-promotion agenda. And I think that's all it's about. I don't think he really... I think if he won the presidency, he'd be happy about it. But I don't think that's what it's about. That's why I don't like it. I just don't believe it.
Do you think he has a plan?
Yes. I think his plan... I think he has a plan.
I mean, apart from just throwing stones, which...
I do.
He's very good at.
He's very good at, and...
But...
Truthfully, I believe he had a plan a long time ago, and he's out-strategized any other plan that any other candidate has. I don't know what that plan is. Can't even guess at it. But he doesn't strike me as a guy who doesn't go in knowing the angles and doesn't go in without a plan.
Do you...
And I'm specifically talking about a plan for governing. Like,
yeah, I believe he has that too.
Like, what changes is he going to make that are going to solve the problems that he's throwing stones about? Because I don't think I've heard that from him yet.
You've heard a few things. He's talked about... And I can't figure out if he's speaking figuratively on this, but he said... As far as the southern border, you put up a wall and you put up a nice door in that wall, and then you know, blah blah blah. Okay, great.
Well, he had to say that, right? Because if he didn't say the door part, he basically wrote off a third of the electorate. And
okay, fine. So we all know that it doesn't matter what they say. Rob even said this about his beloved that, well, those are just campaign promises, so you don't even have to expect them. You don't have to support them for their positions. It's essentially down to who you like.
That's true. He's not going to build a wall.
Maybe he will.
So why do you think good old Donald's been around a while? Why is he choosing now? Why didn't he bust up 2008? Or why didn't he run against Obama in 2012? I'm sure he wasn't a big fan. Like, why has anyone really tried to figure out like why
That's
he's like?
That's why I think he has a plan, because they talked about it before, and he's kind of. I think it was the last election. He was, like, got right up to the point and then pulled back. Nah,
I guess I remember.
Now
that you mention that, I guess I remember it like a whisper of it.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that was calculated.
Yes.
I mean, his odds in this election were much better than...
Why?
Than, huh?
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, because if you're trying to beat an incumbent president... You have to have the support of your party.
Yes.
And he doesn't have that, and he ain't never going to have that. So.
You have that smug look on your face like that's wrong, Rob.
No, it's right. It warms my heart. I have the look because, I don't know, I always enjoy the dichotomy that happens about my man Barack Obama. Is from his enemies. Basically, you have on one side, a complete idiot, has no idea what he's doing. You know, can't even pass high school. I can't even believe he ever attended a class or anything. But then when it comes to, like, politically, everybody, the Democrats are scared of him. Donald Trump's scared of him. Everybody's scared of him. Mitt Romney's scared of him. Nobody wanted to run in 2012. So it's like he did a terrible job. He had no idea what he was doing. But, I mean, then he should be able to be easily whooped by not only the primary winner in 2012, but really like the next top five. Any of them could beat this guy. Look at this clown. And actually, in reality, nobody wanted to face him in 2012. They sent Mitt Romney up to the slaughter, I think. You know, so out of all the rhetoric,
you'll notice Jerry said an incumbent president. He didn't say the incumbent president. He didn't say can't beat Barack Obama.
Well, I think it was certainly true in this case.
I think it was true, maybe. But
I don't think people wanted. I think Mitt Romney was a figurehead to basically lose. I don't think they really thought that they could win. And now 2016, now's the chance because we got this guy that we can't beat out of there. And so that, I think that's why the Trump shows up.
Who is the Democratic Party's Donald Trump?
There's Bernie Sanders.
You think?
I think so.
I don't know.
I think it's Bernie Sanders because he's not electable. I think he's authentic. I think he speaks his mind. I don't think he's polished. I think he appeals to a part of the Democratic base that hasn't really been talked to all that much. And so...
You mean the socialists?
Right, the socialists. and we could all twist this back to the Democratic primary and why that's been so quiet, which is kind of weird.
Well, I'm just trying to formulate the analog here. Like, if Bernie Sanders had run against George W. in 2004, would we have had this same conversation just reversed?
You're saying if Bernie actually, I mean, are you claiming that you're believing that Trump's going to make it through?
No. I'm just saying that Sanders would have had no chance against George W. in 2004.
Oh, right.
Whereas in 2008, when it was an open field,
so I got to think of. I guess I have to think of the John Kerry time because I really thought
that couldn't possibly be true because that's the.
I really thought Kerry was going to win. I was a believer then. So, and I think we talked about this before.
But see, Kerry had the party's backing, right? He had full support of the Democratic Party. So he is the only one who had a chance. Bernie Sanders would never have a chance.
Right. Oh, yeah.
In the middle of two terms.
Let's take a small aside here and point out and do what Rob hates most when we point out his hypocrisy. You just said.
There is none.
Well, in the last election, Barack Obama is so dumb, can't even pass high school, blah, blah, blah. But they couldn't beat him. Nobody wanted to run against him. Well, George W. Bush, everything we heard, how stupid he is, daddy got him through this, daddy got him, he's an idiot, Dick Cheney's running the country, but you couldn't beat him.
That's right.
Well,
same thing.
It is
exactly the same.
Okay.
And that's where I really fault my, I feel exactly the way people feel about Mitt Romney. It's like why, to me, and it's just, to me the analogies are exactly the same. You had the health care thing go, happen in Obama's first term, and it became this big kind of issue. And it seemed like it was easy to run against and win on, and they couldn't run against and win on. And then when Iraq happened, like I remember when the whole Iraq thing went off, I was like, I'm not sure if he's right, but he better be right because there's going to be hell to pay. And it turned out, like much to my, struggles, there was no hell to pay. You just get right back in there, which is a lot like conservatives feel about the health care thing, right? You pass this big mammoth law, you high five, you feel like most people, you feel like it's a big disaster what happened, then you get right back in there. It's the same sort of thing. So I don't really know. I mean, overall I was a Kerry fan at the beginning, and then after the swift boat events and then the windsurfing and, I mean,
windsurfing may have been my favorite.
It's sort of like the wheels just went off and then I'm like, why do we have to have this guy be our standard bearer,
Yeah. I felt the same way about Bob Dole.
Yeah. And that's probably what people felt like with Mitt Romney. Like this was our chance to take down this guy and we botched it. So you just must feel nervous, right? You got to feel nervous.
I don't feel nervous.
You should feel nervous.
It almost doesn't matter.
You feel fatalist about conservatives' chances in the presidential
election. I feel fatalist about government.
Amen. Preach on, Brother Jeremy. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have some listener feedback that we want to dig into and maybe hit up a couple of stories in the reading room. So stay with us. Calling Scott Walker as the nominee. You heard it here first, folks.
Boo. I kind of want to get on that bandwagon. I'll jump on your bandwagon.
He's a zero, and he looked like he was stoned in the debate. I don't like Ted Cruz, and I don't understand why the Republican Party is not embracing Carly
Figueroa.
Figueroa.
See, you don't even know her name. Maybe that's why.
We were talking about that in the break. We were making fun.
Yeah,
Casey Figueroa. Yeah, come on up here. You can be our token female
candidate.
But why? That's one way to neutralize Hillary. I don't get it.
We don't get it. That's right. We have a female too.
Yeah, we have, and she's bright, and she hasn't let somebody steal all of our secrets by having her own email server.
That we know of.
Yeah, well.
Well, and I don't know why Jim Webb doesn't get more play in the Democratic Party. I like a little Jim Webb.
You can't have President Webb.
Why not? What if he's a Spidey sense?
Oh, see.
You can change his name. He's got to check him out on Wikipedia.
Jim Webb.
Virginia Senator.
No.
Hotshot in the Navy, military service, Bronze Star. Why not?
Just bronze.
I don't know what it was. Hey, let's check your stars, star boy.
I don't have any stars.
Next. Anyway, onwards.
All right. Marco Rubio. I like some of the stuff he said, but he's way too intense. I thought he was... He just looked like he was about ready to explode.
Did he forget to take his meds?
Yeah. All right, that's all I have about that.
All right. We got quite a bit of feedback from our listener, AJ, and we touched on this topic last time about legislating morality, and I think we even said that we might have to do a whole episode about this sometime. But he wrote in some of his views on morality, and I thought some of these ideas he had were interesting. We should discuss them. So one of the things he said was, using the Ten Commandments as a moral code, many of the commandments aren't enshrined into law. And the ones that are because there are impacted parties. Like for stealing, you can't violate others' property rights. Or for bearing false witness in the case of perjury for due process. Murder, because you can't violate another citizen's standing to be alive. Coveting would cover greed, which isn't illegal, but I suppose would cover acts of cheating or fraud, which are breaking market rules, not a moral code. So I started out agreeing with what he said there, and then by the end I was disagreeing because... And we've discussed on the show before my three principles. I think if you go back to episode 27, something like that, is
26.
When it might have been 26. We're talking about my three principles, and one of those is the initiation of force is immoral. And that, to me, as an anarchist, is what defines morality. So any of these crimes that we have laws against, if they involve the initiation of force of one party against another, then there's a victim, and that defines a crime. So I agree with what he said about, you know, stealing, murder, etc. But then when he gets to the end talking about cheating or fraud, those represent an initiation of force as well. So as far as I'm concerned, they're immoral. It's, you know, somebody misrepresenting themselves or...
You're talking about buying a car. That's rife with misrepresenting.
Right. Or manipulating someone to get them to do something you want them to, even though it's against their will, or it would be against their will if they had better information.
Right.
So you're initiating force against them to get them to do something that's going to benefit you. So that's immoral.
So maybe we need to have AJ on the podcast again, and we could.
Yeah.
I mean, he might be talking about issues in capitalism where there's certain rules. You know, you can't steal, whatever it is. But as you mentioned, Gordon Gekko. I mean, there's rules that are in place in capitalism and are in place in the laws of our country that allow all sorts of shady things to go on in order to improve your business or your profit standing. My sports analogy, since the Rams are on, we often talk about, like, is it morally correct to, if you're a defensive back and you're completely beat on a play and a bomb is coming down and it's going to be an 80-yard touchdown pass, to just go tackle the guy? Just tackle him right there. You don't even have to wait for the ball. Just grab him, tackle him, get the pass interference, get the ball at that place. Hey, at least it's not a touchdown. Is that in the spirit of the rules? Is it in the spirit of the game? No, it's completely outside of what the rules are of the game. You're not supposed to do it. They have a penalty against it. But is it a smart play? It's a very smart play. Right.
But if you watch the Rams, they don't actually do that. They actually let the touchdown happen.
So. Right, right. See, but, they're true believers
but,
in the sport.
But what
of the
you're
game.
Describing is a situation where the penalty doesn't fit the crime, right? That the perceived benefit of committing the crime is greater than the penalty for getting caught.
Right.
Doing
so I like my analogy because this you're right. So it's a loophole in the rules that is not properly punishing a D-back just tackling a guy with the ball in the air. It's a loophole in the rule. But what do we do? What do we do in a capitalistic society? We set these rules and we pay people lots of money to find gaps in those rules.
Right.
Not to make the spirit of a fine transaction between willing parties. It's how can we work this system to be maximally beneficial for myself?
Well,
and that's what. Maybe that's what he's talking about, is being a market rule and not a moral code. Obviously, I believe AJ thinks stealing and cheating somebody out is morally wrong. But maybe it's not a market
rule. I don't know well enough to say that. Though.
I've seen his tweets. He's a good man.
So the difference I see is, to use your football analogy, you have players on the field who are involved in making the rules.
What do you mean?
They are allowed to strongly influence how those rules are written.
That's the competition committee. It's all these old
dudes. Jeff Fisher's on the competition committee.
Well,
I'm not a player.
I'm not saying he was.
I'm just saying.
You brought up the Rams. I'm just saying he's involved, all right?
I think I know where you're going, there's a feedback loop there, but I'm not so sure.
The corporation that is exploiting those loopholes that you're talking about in the law to profit, you know, and it gets into the whole externalities discussion that we've had in the past, but that corporation not only finds the loopholes, but can also work it from the back end, right?
They
can try to influence how the laws are written in the first place, or they can get the laws repealed or amended to benefit them.
And the corporations do that. We know that.
Yeah.
It was the health... Well, let me not use healthcare because that's... But the... Was it after 2008 they decided, all right, we got to reform how credit is given out and, you know, the credit card industry. Well, who wrote... the legislation for the reform? the credit card right. industry.
Right. They're lawyers.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yes, exactly what you're saying, Gary.
So, I mean, I think I'll put words in AJ's mouth now. I think he would agree that there are things that shouldn't be going on, you know, that, let me rephrase it. Just because something is legal doesn't mean it's moral.
Right. Exactly.
So it's possible to initiate force and harm someone else, thereby committing a crime, and stay within the confines of the law.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
And that's probably, and then he goes on to mention kind of Sharia law or Christian law, and, you know, and I think that's the distinction that I guess gets lost is people expect the Ten Commandments. When people post the Ten Commandments on the courthouse, they expect there to be a one-to-one correspondence between morality and legal definitions, and that's just not. I mean, and he goes on to mention same-sex marriage. I think I finally understand AJ's post. It took me a while, but like the same-sex marriage is another thing. You know, it's however you feel that represents your religious beliefs. I think from a legislative perspective, those two things can be different, and I think they are now, which is all for the better.
Yeah, so I mean, he's basically saying that laws that we had in the past against those things were based on, how's he put it here, the Christian faith disapproval of homosexuality as immoral. What was made clear after the 14th Amendment that led to full citizenship and rights for former slaves is that it is unconstitutional in the United States to make a special class of citizenship for certain groups.
Right. Right, and that's completely, if you call it religious morality, the idea of creating a special class for certain groups, that's what you have religious morality for, right? We're the chosen ones or the holy ones. We're the ones doing it right. You're the heathen. You're doing it wrong. I mean, that whole special class thing is a big proponent of it, and that's what the Constitution doesn't allow.
Right.
USA, baby. Hashtag.
So AJ goes on to say, the moral judgment of whoever is in charge at the time is not an adequate reason to make something illegal, even if those laws persist as the majority is in charge. The standard for a law ought to be the willing consent to the transaction by involved parties, which does not harm unrelated parties. Now, he's sounding an awful lot like me when he says that, because he's basically saying, if you're not harmed by a transaction, it should be legal.
He's just buttering up to you to get on the podcast.
Yeah, well, he just had a baby, so he's probably not going to be joining us anytime soon. But yeah, I mean, if you're not causing harm to somebody else, it's my third principle, right? You have the right to do whatever you want, unless or until it infringes on the rights of another to do the same.
But then the gray area comes in where somebody, where do they draw the line on what harms them? Some people feel I live in a country that allows this and that harms me. So therefore,
because I have to be around it.
Still, so same-sex marriage is now legal.
Right.
You still have, it's in the news, there is a county clerk somewhere who refuses
Kentucky.
To issue.
Right.
It's been more than just one place, but refuses to issue a marriage license to a same-sex couple because it violates their religious beliefs.
Sure.
But they're also in an office that is, they're executing the laws of the government.
So right. And that's the only reason we're talking about it is because that person's a government employee.
Right.
And it blurs those lines.
Yes.
If she worked at a private company that had to issue marriage licenses, they would have fired her the first time she said no, and it never would have made the news.
Right.
Right. It's because she's a government employee, and they can't fire her. Ba-dum-tsh.
So where does the harm end, or begin and end? And what, how can you reasonably say that is harming you?
Well, so it doesn't happen often that rights conflict, but this might be one of those cases where her right to her religious beliefs conflict with those two individuals' rights to apply for a marriage license.
That's fine. That means she can't hold that job.
Now, of course, I would say that you eliminate that conflict by getting rid of marriage licenses.
Of course.
And then the problem goes away, but...
I see a flaw in this argument, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. I wonder if this person who refused to issue that license, what about people who were living together before they were married, or somebody, the lady in the relationship is pregnant and they come in for...
Right.
Is that okay? Because in the bio, you're not supposed to do all that. But
there's got to be plenty of people who find that morally objectionable as
right.
well.
But is the marriage license then reconciling an immoral situation? So they, like, oh, okay, here, take two of them. You
right.
know, let's turn two on this.
That's
one.
Right. Let's get you double married.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question.
I don't have the answer. I know Rob doesn't have the answer.
I don't.
What would this same clerk say if, you know, our stereotypical Mormon showed up and wanted, you know, yeah. her second or third marriage license for...
I'm going to need a half a dozen, though. You get yeah. any photocopy? You got a Xerox machine around?
Would she object to that as well? Who
I
knows?
I suspect so. So why is that illegal? Why is polygamy illegal?
I because government is involved.
Yeah.
I mean, the government decided it had a compelling interest to prevent that from happening. And no one has ever, you know, been able to convince people otherwise. I don't know.
I don't know.
So last point AJ makes here is... he says, I have a theory that morality is actually a luxury good purchased with social capital, and the organizations of capital markets can either boost morality or create a deficit. So it would make sense that in much the same way, those with a lot of wealth hoard a lot of power, they also seek to impose their morality through potentially dangling salvation as another way to get people to give in to their economic ideas. So, we talked about this in the break a little bit. I think what he is saying is that people with social capital, whether that be rich people in our society or just people with a lot of influence, whether they're politicians or maybe clergy or somebody else that, you know, is able to influence people's decisions, they decide what morality is. And
why are they the authority?
Right.
Yeah.
So is that true? I mean, can we point to specific examples where that's happened?
I brought up the hearse.
Yeah.
And outlawing hemp to support his own as a backdoor way of supporting his own industry. Well, let's outlaw this. That way this guy can't make a profit and it boosts my profit.
Right.
And to this day, you have people trying to get hemp legalized.
Right.
As essentially an industrial product.
So the first example that popped into my head was the teetotalers of, you know, Prohibition era, basically convincing people that alcohol was evil and that, you know, their morality was superior to everybody else's, right?
Yeah.
Alcohol is evil. We need to ban it. And they had a lot of social capital, right? They weren't necessarily the richest people in society, but they held a lot of the influence, and they managed to convince a vast majority of people in this country to pass the 18th Amendment. Was that the moral thing to do?
So what has it ever been calculated? What was gained and what was lost? Think of all the for lack of a better term, gang warfare that came out of
well,
it.
Well, yeah, We have organized crime
that
still exists today as a result of that. It took root during those 13 years of prohibition, and it never went away. So
many people died from bathtub gin, or
right.
That's not the name of a prostitute. That was the way to.
It was a card game.
Bathtub gin rummy. So, I don't know. Are there other examples you guys can think of?
No, I can't.
All right.
What else did AJ have to say? He's right about the my bringing up all this for a damn flag. Yeah. I was hoping to generate a little
cop out.
Something out of that, but cop out. I even said it when I brought it up on the podcast. Like, yeah, I don't really remember this or that, but.
But
yeah, you're right.
It stuck in your brain, and it was completely fabricated by someone trying to stir the pot and get Facebook likes.
But I do have to call out, it's not seven syllables, all right? Everything he says here is six. So, there.
So, there.
Fail.
You were a little you were a little noncommittal on whether or not Trump was isolating Mexican
immigrants. I said there was an argument. Our guest was saying, no, he didn't say it. Somebody else said, yeah, I think he did. And I said, whatever he said, because it wasn't going anywhere. The guest believed he didn't say it.
Yeah.
You believed he did. I said, whatever he said, here's this. So,
yeah. So
yes, he in fact did say Mexico.
AJ gave us a link to a quote. I guess, transcript from his candidacy announcement. And he said, when Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
Let's backtrack a little on that, and some are good.
Some must be not
some
terrible.
Of them. Right. I'll give you some of them.
To his point, though, what's been in the news lately?
I don't know. Everything.
Everything has been in the news. Well, no, there was. There was a girl who was killed by a drunk driver. He had been.
Oh yeah, I heard about that one.
He had been, I don't know if he had been deported twice. I don't think it is. I just saw it today. There's the girl in California who was shot by the illegal immigrant. There's, yeah, those are just a couple of examples. And because of the, because it's a hot topic, if something happens somewhere, it's going to show up.
Right.
So what's the percentage? Is it any worse than crime in general here? I don't know. But it's not zero.
Right. All right, we got quite a few stories in the reading room. We want to touch on a couple of these.
Let's not forget AJ's comment here about the false argument.
Okay. All right.
Talks about, quote, Africans were selling the slaves to the slave traders, end quote, being a false argument. How does Africa-based wholesalers excuse those who retailed slaves or demanded slave labor or other ill treatment of indigenous people in America? Question. Don't blame the prostitutes for the demand of prostitution. All transactions have a seller and, importantly, a buyer. We were not blaming the slaves, which is what your prostitution argument says.
No, the claim
we were saying,
go ahead.
Let's look at the whole picture. Who was selling? Who was buying?
Right.
Let's not just say you buyers are bad, and that's what's happening. We aren't saying the slaves were bad. So, false arguments. What you pose here is a kind of a false
and
counter
the key,
argument.
The key there is that the sellers at the source were different race from the buyers.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just don't like the whole line. Come on, it's the whole line of reasoning, like hey, everybody's bad. Everybody's got their problems.
No, you're missing the point, Rob. You're missing the point.
No, that is the point.
It's not excusing the behavior. It's not excusing the behavior.
But what is it doing? Everybody does the same thing?
No, not everybody does the same thing. It's saying, let's see the whole picture. Quit placing blame only here.
Yeah. Everybody,
you aren't innocent.
Everybody in the supply chain was culpable.
You as a race.
Yes.
I think that's fair and known. I guess that's not a surprising point to me.
It's a response. It's a response to those who would. I don't remember if we talked about reparations in the last episode, but
I don't think we did.
But it's a response to those who would claim reparations are due because, you know, it was one race perpetrating slavery on another race, and the idea is it wasn't exclusively whites perpetrating slavery on blacks.
Right. So how would you dole out the reparations?
Right.
Right. And would you do it just based on race? That's fair. I'll buy that. It seems like a very easy answer that white people tell themselves that yes, we may have had institutional racism from the time the country was founded the way to now, but it sounds like a cop out.
Say these were the only slaves.
No question, there are those who will use that to kind of, you know, absolve themselves from responsibility.
Right. And that's not the point.
Not that anyone alive today is responsible for slavery. Let me just say that.
That's a separate episode. Interestingly enough, I know we're late in the podcast, but I found it was to dovetail with your comment about are people alive that are responsible for slavery back then. There was just an anniversary in Japan of some event. Now I can't remember what it was. Anyway, it was today, and it came up on the news. And now the Japan Prime Minister has to kind of acknowledge Japan's history throughout World War II and the imperial regime. You know, so he's trying to look forward to the future, and he says, you know, well, 4 out of 5 Japanese people alive today weren't, you know, had no connection to what that was. You know, well, what if they won? What if they conquered all of Asia or whatever they were? You know, what if they won the whole Pacific? Well, those 4 out of 5 people were going to get some benefits out of that, you know, out of that victory. You know, so I don't know. It dovetails. We're not saying that people alive today were responsible for the slavery back then. It's the question of are the people alive today the beneficiaries or being hurt by those policies that were perpetrated back then. I mean, I think in the Japan case, we're only a few generations removed. If they were lords of Asia, I think it would be a little bit different.
Maybe.
Interesting way to put it. Interesting thought, me. Thanks, me. Come on, Jeremy.
I'm
it was
distracted.
Great.
I think Lords of Asia is a heavy metal band.
Maybe that's where I got the term.
All right, moving on to the reading room. I have one story here I wanted to call our listeners' attention to. The title is "In Zimbabwe, We Don't Cry for Lions." So one of the stories that broke this past month was Cecil. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name.
Doesn't matter.
Neither is he.
Yeah. So there was this outrage over a dentist from Minnesota. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
Who went on a big game safari to Africa. There's details to this story that are kind of irrelevant as far as I'm concerned about, you know, the circumstances, how they got the lion into a position where he could kill it. Whatever. Who cares? The point of this essay, though, is written by a native Zimbabwean who lives here in the United States now, and he's flummoxed by America's reaction to this story. Like, where he comes from, when a lion was killed, it was cause for celebration. He says they danced around their fires, and it meant one less lion was going to be preying on their relatives, their crops, their livestock. And so, they had a totally different attitude. If you live there, if you grew up around lions, you know the danger they represent, and you're not ashamed when they get killed, okay? And
why are you looking so shocked,
and,
Rob?
But the most important comment he made in there is Zimbabweans can't understand why Americans care more about African animals than we do African people. And I think that was pretty profound.
Your second point's a good one. The first one's kind of stupid, though. The guy didn't go there to kill a lion to protect his family. He went there to enact his will by sitting in an air-conditioned Range Rover and shooting a bullet into a lion. I mean, it's the crass.
So you can,
killing for not even for sport, right?
Yeah.
It's just for enjoyment.
We can have the discussion about whether or not it's sport, but the fact that he culled a lion that was admittedly aged. Right? That was the reason that it was in this preserve in the first place, because it couldn't make it out couldn't make it on its own out in the jungle.
It seems
it's an arrogant thing. Not arrogant. Almost like vanity. Look at this trophy. Look at this.
That I did that you set
right.
up for
look,
me.
So look at this fish that I caught in this barrel.
Right.
It wasn't
exactly.
like he was living in the village and fought off a lion.
Right.
And
trying to get his
trophy.
Right. Right.
But on your second point,
they don't draw a distinction between. I mean, any dead lion is a good lion, right?
Well, maybe that's.
They should.
They should.
When you lived in Zimbabwe, did you?
They should see that this guy's motivations are different than their own.
Why should they see that?
Well, I should tell them. I want to get to your second.
He has the experience. I'm going to listen to that guy. He's lived there. He's experienced.
I want to get to your second point. Is a better point though about you know. Like, and it comes to the whole Black Lives Matter thing.
Right.
It's like certain things, like the guy who got shot during the Ferguson protests, you know, this last week or something, became a big thing. There's been murders, and there's been people killed at a rate of about once a night. It doesn't even cause a blip.
No.
You know, and so, if you think about. Yeah, why this one lion causes outrage.
It's funny you mentioned that. I mean, this essay was in the New York Times, and the photo that accompanied it was of a bunch of protesters standing there holding signs, and one of the women's holding a sign that says, "I am Cecil."
Right.
And it's like, really?
No.
Right.
No, you're not. Well, a friend of mine on Facebook, this guy I went to college with, he posts some stuff, and I just kind of scratch my head, look at the unfriend button, and then move on. But he said, "I am so happy this guy has been identified so that his dental practice can fail, and this can ruin his life." Like,
that seems like a strong...
That seems very strong to me.
Yeah.
Why do you care?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Well, it's kind of like, two episodes ago when we had Keith on the show and all the anger and resentment that people had for him and the same kind of comments, you know. It's like, I'm glad this happened. This is going to ruin his business and ruin his life. Why are people happy about that?
I don't get it, and I think that's we're talking about legislating morality and now... Because of social media, because of the 24-hour news cycle, the court of public opinion and mob justice is running wild.
Well, yeah, and it is. It is
and
very,
that's what this is.
It's because very much a social media kind of thing. Little pictures on Facebook and it gets shared around, and maybe we should just get rid of Facebook. But I thought the best little bit of satire about
Facebook, you doorknob.
You should. About the Black Lives Matter versus the Cecil thing is I think someone posted there like, I got to get me a lion suit. I'm going out tonight. You know, that way if you get shot, somebody's going to care. Right? It was just it's a very perfect way to see things.
Yeah. And
it's
was
awful.
There was another meme with the hashtag Zebra Lives Matter. And
oh, yeah.
The zebras that were happy to hear about the death of Cecil. All right, so what else we got here in the reading room? Jeremy, you got any in there you want to highlight?
Not really. I finally watched the video of Sam Dubose. That was pretty awful.
Yeah.
And pathetic to watch this cop try to spin the narrative.
Yeah.
Boy, got my arm caught in there, you know. He didn't run over me.
Yeah. Ooh,
it's all the same narrative we've heard for years, decades.
So,
during those
the question is, how often does that happen?
Yeah, that's the question.
Right.
And And how just, often did it happen before there were cameras?
That's what I'm saying. That was the most shocking. I mean, the incident itself was awful.
Yeah.
But when you hear, and the same thing happened in the North Carolina, South Carolina one, whatever the narrative is, like they're so trained to you know, perform this sort of story about what happened.
Right.
That, like, if you go back in time and you put it against the data, we've heard that. You always heard that story. Oh, I feared for my life. He grabbed my, whatever
right.
it is.
And how does the guy, I mean, he's wearing a camera. He knows he's wearing a camera. Yeah. How does the guy think this? He's going to be able to reconcile this story later? He either believes that he's going to be able to destroy the evidence that's on his camera, or this is so much ingrained, this is just
what
so much the default right. standard operating procedure,
right.
this is what you right. do, right. that he follows that regardless of the fact that he's being videotaped.
Right.
I'm curious about the training and how well do they know the law to say, okay, you can't just drag this guy out of the car because he hasn't actually done anything worthy of dragging him out of the car.
Right, right, right.
So how does that kick in, or where does that come in? I don't know. I'm asking.
It was a good example. I mean, that's why I mean, my patience for the whole Mike Brown Ferguson situation just gets less and less as time goes on. Because then you have like, why do we deify a Mike Brown in this case when you have this guy, like, yeah, he might have had a little ball of eight ball in his, whatever his issue was, And yeah, I mean, he might not have
balls come in a bottle.
That's right. But he might not have gotten out of the car. But it's like, I mean, that's a situation where the guy, I mean, maybe he wasn't, maybe he had a taillight out, whatever it was. But it didn't deserve him being dragged out. And if
right.
he didn't want to get dragged out, it certainly didn't deserve him getting shot in the face, And it's like, if you need, yeah. And so, I mean, maybe I can understand symbolically that for whatever reason that Mike Brown has turned maybe the world's attention eyes to this problem. So it's symbolically,
what,
but I mean, you could have had
a reporter. Is it?
It's just tough because you could have had a better symbol.
About,
right.
Yeah, we've talked why this one.
Right.
Why
right.
Because
yeah.
He, I still right. don't understand how he gets swept under the rug. What he did
right.
at the convenience store.
Right.
I don't get that at all. But the closing down, the protesters closing down Highway 70. I don't understand that at all. I feel like you are only going to turn people against you
yeah.
by doing
right.
that.
You're right. It's poor marketing of their
it
their
is,
cause.
And I think it's the narcissist. I go back to narcissism. The people. Oh, I'm gonna join this cause. Look how good I am.
Right.
If you look at the video and the, it's not who it's not who you would stereotype of being involved in this movement. So.
Meaning,
a bunch of skinny little white girls out there.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and white guys. It's people from all walks of life, or not just one race doing this. But it's do they even know what they're doing?
In a lot of cases, they don't. No, I mean, but let's talk about the ones who do know what they're doing.
Yeah,
they're protesting. What are they protesting? It's not a homogeneous population of protesters.
No.
They all have their own agendas. I believe some of them are justified in shutting a highway down. I think their cause is great enough that it warrants something like that. We talked about several episodes ago about, Martin Luther King said rioting is the language of the unheard. When you have nothing else to lose,
right.
that is what you have to do to get people's attention
sure.
that, hey, something is wrong and I need it fixed and I don't know how to fix it.
Right.
So,
and doing that kind of thing gets you your national news and whatever.
I'm willing to.
I think it's a decent tactic. I think it's just misplaced.
Yeah.
And that is the wrong time.
And I think you're totally right, Jeremy, that for the most part, it's poor marketing.
Yes.
And all they're doing is turning people against their cause.
Right.
I agree. But I think there is some small non-zero number of protesters that are justified in doing that. it's just unfortunate that they don't feel like there's any other avenue available to them. But.
Well.
All right. I think we've come to the end of another episode.
Whoop!
Yeah. Eric sent us something about the Pluto... recent Pluto flyby. I forget the name of the spacecraft that did
New Horizons.
And the conspiracy theorists who say it's faked the image at NASA, faked the images.
Yeah.
I don't really buy into that. But my thing was... They've been flying there for 10 years, and all the thing did was fly by. It just buzzed right by, and it's gone. They didn't even put it in orbit for a little bit.
they couldn't carry that much fuel.
Whatever.
My favorite tweet about the thing was...
I was the same way. I was like, really? We're just kind of flying by at 300,000 miles an hour? But, you know, if they were going to get it there... in a reasonable amount of time, like within a human lifetime, they had to be going that fast.
Right. Well, let's take another year to get there and put it in order.
I think it would have been more like another 15 years.
Sure. I know.
Right. Right.
It's not a...
And, you know...
Taking orbital mechanics.
My favorite tweet on the topic was that we essentially disowned it as a planet, and then we acted like we didn't care, and then we sent something to it, and then we drove by it real slow.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty good.
By its house.
That's right. It's like, I know we broke up, but I'm just driving by to see what you're up to.
Like a boombox. Like a Peter Gabriel song. The big heart. It even had a big heart on it.
Right. Sorry, Pluto. All
right. I want to thank all of our listeners, especially AJ, for sending us some good feedback that we had a chance to discuss tonight. I want to thank everybody else who has supported us over the last 4 years. And thank GC for hosting us once again.
Why do you do that every time? We have not. Thanks, GC, for not throwing us out.
Yeah.
It's about the best. All right.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.